The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse.
The beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan.
Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the beautiful Missouri Ozarks, greetings and welcome. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and guess what? PID Radio. Who knew we were going to do one of these today?
Not me.
Neither did I. Sam did, however. He got up this morning, looked at me, and said, you know what, Mom? I think a PID Radio today. What do you think?
It's time.
It's time. My fans have been writing to me.
Yes.
I have got emails stacked up taller than I am, which honestly doesn't take many emails.
That's true. That's true. But here we are, and we welcome you back. Today is October the 23rd of 2016. It's been some months since we've done one. I've lost track.
I don't know.
I've got to go to our website, PIDradio.com, which, of course, is where you'll find all of the archives of the program.
It is. You know what? And if you just discovered we are out there, if you are a viewer of Skywatch TV or Sci Friday or both, then we thank you for doing that. But, you know, you may have just... What are these people, PID Radio? Whenever we go down to Morningside...
They introduce
you. You always get introduced as the co-host of PID Radio, and we're thinking, gosh, maybe... Maybe we ought to go back to doing that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, or maybe I should submit an updated bio.
I don't know. But, you know, we've talked about, well, you and I have actually talked about doing a Peering into Darkness program on Skywatch TV.
And that will probably happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're praying it will. But in the meantime, because Sam decided that we have to do one, he sent out, you know, an email blast
to
all of his fans.
Yeah.
Both of them got a note saying that that he was going to make sure Mom and Dad did a PID Radio just for him.
And little did we know, one of those is a sock puppet account of his own. So
I know. We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. But the Cubs won.
Yeah.
If you haven't noticed, the Cubs won the pennant.
And going to the World Series for the first time since 1945. My dad was 10 years old the last time. And sadly for him, that was the last time he saw the Cubs in a World Series.
Well, it's a once-in-a-lifetime, if you're lucky, kind of thing. And we pray that, you know, honestly, we just pray that everybody who plays the game gets to have a good time.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because this is such a remarkable event, because the Cubs haven't won a World Series since the Roosevelt administration, and we mean Teddy, not Franklin.
Yes.
It's a bigger story than just baseball. Now, the Cleveland Indians, they've got a pretty good story of their own. They've not won a World Series since 1948 when Lou Boudreau was the player-manager, shortstop,
Hey, look,
Hall
that's,
of Famer.
That's recent.
That's recent history compared to the Cubs, though.
They barely squeaked into the 20th century.
Yeah. So it's going to be a good series. The Indians have a good team. But because this is bigger than normal for if it was the Yankees and Dodgers again, or the Yankees and the Giants, a lot of people expected the Giants because the Giants had made a practice in recent years of winning in odd number, or even number years, 08, 10, 12, 14, they'd won the World Series. The Giants were the first team that the Cubs had to face in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little nerve wracking. Took the Cubs 5 games to do it, but they did defeat the Giants finally and moved on to the second round. But if it were the Giants and the Yankees, for example, now, the Yankees didn't make it to the playoffs this year, but, you know, teams that were routinely in there year after year after year, it probably wouldn't be as big of a deal, except to the fans of those teams and real hardcore baseball fans. But I think even casual fans of baseball are like, what? The Cubs are in the World Series? The apocalypse is nigh! So,
and it may be. We don't know.
Yeah. This could be a sign. But one of the commentators on Fox last night, Alex Rodriguez, who is a future Hall of Famer, baseball Hall of Famer, made the comment that, you know, for the first time in a long time, baseball owns October, you know, because National Football League is on and the NFL really has taken over from baseball as America's favorite pastime. But even on Sundays now, there will be a lot of people, more people probably paying attention to what happens over the next week and a half than to the NFL. So baseball is continuing to be relevant deeper into the season because the Cubs have made it this far. Now, it is funny that when the Cubs manager, Joe Maddon, was asked, what did you use as motivation to get the team to win in game six of this series? He said, it's because my wife and I want to watch football tomorrow. So, you know. Yeah, he said, I didn't want to have to be preparing for a game. We his favorite team and her favorite team are playing each other, so he wanted to stay home and watch football. So he just maybe promised the guys extra pizza.
You know, could be, yeah.
So anyway.
Free cannolis for everybody?
Yeah, could be. I don't think they were thinking cannolis last night based on what I saw.
No,
It was stuff that came in big green bottles. So.
Well, you think so?
Yeah.
Well, you know, they're guys.
Young men, half my age, so. Anyway, well, a lot going on in the world out there, though, besides baseball.
So much since we last did a PID radio. You know, we love using Evernote. It's mm-hmm. a great source for if you're a writer or someone who has to come up with stories to talk about and link them together. It's a good way to organize. And I started talking about doing Peering into Darkness or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, in case you're new, PID Radio, PID stands for Peering into Darkness. We had talked about doing this supernatural kind of show for Skywatch, but it's the kind of thing you and I have been doing for 11 plus years.
Exactly.
In PID Radio.
Right.
So I started an Evernote folder called Peering into Darkness, and I'm just looking through the stories. Half of them are about creepy clowns.
Yeah, that has been a real...
And which may or may not have something to do with baseball. You know, in creepy clowns, baseball, I don't know.
No. We could make a joke about umpires, but I don't think that's really relevant.
No,
and fair.
But honestly,
not fair.
It's really not. But seriously, this creepy clown thing, it's very possible that the majority of these clown sightings are because social media has run with this. However it got started, social mm-hmm. media has run with it, and there are kids out there. It's the latest craze. Okay, dress up as a clown. If you're making money on your YouTube or other videos, then you can get lots of hits. If you can get in the news and suddenly you're viral and everybody's tuning into it. However, because people like myself don't want to see a creepy clown at night outside their property.
Right.
Looking threatening, whether or not it's a real machete that you are wielding or not.
Mm-hmm.
There may be some who take umbrage at that and just point a gun at you.
Right. I made the comment on Facebook when somebody had posted one of these stories that somebody was going to get hurt because here in our part of the world, now in the Ozarks, folks are like as not to be armed. And especially in Missouri now that Missouri has joined the ranks of states that have authorized constitutional carry, which means you can carry a concealed weapon without having to go purchase a permit.
Right.
The state legislature overturned a veto by Governor Nixon.
So don't mess with us here in Missouri.
Yeah.
Because most of us are armed.
Yeah, exactly. And somebody took offense at that and said, well, how can you condone this? And it's like, no. I'm not condoning shooting first and asking questions later. That
not
is not my point at all. But my point is this. If you are trying to scare people, there are some... Whether you think it's a joke or not, there are some people who might not think it's funny, who will interpret your actions as legitimately threatening and defend themselves and their families in the way that they see fit. And that might involve using a firearm.
Exactly. And
that has happened in Fort Wayne.
It has already happened.
Right.
But you know what? Even if you don't have a firearm, you may have a dog, and that dog may be patrolling the yard, whether, you know, you're a clown or not. That dog may say, no, you're not, and just take a bite out of crime.
But the reason for bringing this up, as you pointed out, is that this kind of falls under that description of peering into darkness because mm-hmm. there's something spiritual about this, that taking something that is intended as a form of entertainment for children, mm-hmm. especially something to make you laugh, to give you joy, and to twist it into something frightening and evil, monstrous. There's a spirit at work behind this that would motivate anyone to think that this is funny.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I just don't find it funny at all. And this is really, almost every day I see a new story online about some crazy clown. It's usually a kid dressed up that just mm-hmm. wanted to scare somebody. But some of these kids, like I said, they are videotaping themselves, mm-hmm. posting it to YouTube
social
media accounts. And they're doing it to get attention for themselves or to get lots of clicks so they can make money.
Right.
Either way, you are asking for trouble. And I just, I pray that the kids who are silly enough to do this, that you are protected. But the truth is, there is also, as you say, a spiritual component to this. And, and there are some of these that are not out there to make YouTube clicks. They are out there to genuinely wreak havoc in their neighborhoods.
Yeah. There are stories out of the UK where a 28-year-old man was I think I got his age correct. Anyway, he was sliced. Yeah, 28-year-old man was had his fingers on one of his hands, his right hand, sliced down to the bone. So he's going to be left with a permanent disability.
He is disabled. He's an artist. A joiner.
A joiner, right, which means he's working with his hands. But doing that when you've got the tendons in your hands severed is
exactly
difficult.
It's very, very difficult. There are other stories where some of these clowns have been reported to be carrying machetes or other weapons. There's a young child, again, over in the UK, who a clown picked up a limb and hit the child over the head with it. The child ended up going to ER to over there. I guess it's called the, I can't remember. It's not
that ER. Emergency room, no.
Yeah, no. It's an accident. Accident and something else. Hmm. A&E, I think, is what they call it. Accident and emergency. Unlike arts and entertainment, which is what A&E stands for over here. But many people in English-speaking countries, and over, I've seen stories out of Australia. Mm-hmm. I've seen stories out of Europe. And don't do this in Germany. Look, the Germans are crazy enough right now.
Right.
And nervous enough right now. Don't be foolish enough to add fuel to that fire by jumping into a clown costume and, you know, roaming your neighborhood at night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Things because of the immigration situation that's been forced on the German people by Angela Merkel and her government are really, really angry. She suffered an electoral defeat in her home state. I think it was in September. I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah, it was
now.
About a month and a half ago.
Yeah, which was historic that they, if I remember correctly, they lost that election, for the first time since the end of World War II or something.
Yeah,
so,
it doesn't bode well for her.
But it's something that we've talked about, and I talked about this when we were down at Morningside Church the other day, that this is something that is being forced on Western countries by elites. Not just Germany, France, Sweden. We, you know, hear all the stories there about the problems that they're dealing with because of the people who have been dumped into their countries and who have no desire to assimilate into the culture there. Here we're seeing the same thing in the United States, just from a different angle. We're seeing money being poured into protest groups whose only purpose really is to stir up anger and get us, all of us, at one another's throats. I mean, what started as a local protest in Ferguson, Missouri, when Michael Brown was shot after he assaulted a police officer. I'm sorry, you know, I'm sorry that Mr. and Mrs. Brown lost their son, but he had just robbed a store owner, a convenience store owner, and the kid was a bruiser. He was big.
Yeah.
I mean, he busted the cop's skull, punching him through the window of the police car. And then when he turned and bull rushed him again, you've all heard that story over and over, but started as a local protest. But thanks to like $33 million from George Soros's Open Society Foundation to bring in outside agitators and create an AstroTurf movement, not grassroots, AstroTurf, phony grassroots movement. It went nationwide. And and our president legitimized the violence being conducted, being waged against police officers.
This is part of a spiritual battle going on. So to blame the individuals involved, well, they get free will and they are making bad choices that each individual will have to defend, try defending in front of God when he says, okay, I have these things against you. And you say, well, the reason I did that, no. The last word is mine.
Yeah.
I have these things against you.
Yeah.
Next.
Yeah, exactly. You pointed this out in the Bible study that we've had before, and I've heard others mention this, and I think it's right. We think that, nation will rise against nation. The root word translated into English as nation is ethnos, meaning ethnic, you know, people group. We're being reduced to tribes, and then we're being set on one another deliberately by the elites, because if we're busy fighting one another over who's going to, you know, wind up dominating politics, whether it's, you know, the Hispanics or African-Americans or Asians or Arabic Muslim immigrants or the Anglo-Saxons, you know, we're busy fighting each other. And meanwhile, the elites who are living behind their gated communities and security guards are just laughing all the way to the bank.
And that's what you really have to remember, is that this, the winners in all this, if you want to put it that way, and they are temporary winners, are the elites who are making a lot of money and the spiritual entities who are really behind it all.
Right, because as Paul writes, we are not wrestling against flesh and blood opponents. Our true enemies are the principalities and powers, the rulers of spiritual darkness. Right. Those are the ones.
They are temporary winnings. Right. I mean, the victories that are taking place in the spiritual realm by our enemies, the day is coming.
Yeah.
The Lord is not slow. He is patient, and his arm will reach them.
Yep. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I will repay.
He will indeed. Well, here's another story that sort of goes along that line because it gets into spiritual warfare. October 18th, this was a story the BBC News reported on. Exorcism in Italy is considered now too scary for young priests.
Hmm.
You know, not only do you make me feel bad when you preach at me, don't make me go in and stand up against these spiritual entities because it's scary.
Yeah, yeah. It is. The doctrines of the Roman Catholic Church obviously have some, we have issues with them because their doctrines do not, are not based entirely on Scripture. There are a lot of traditions that have worked their way into official Roman Catholic doctrine over the centuries that are not based in any way, shape, or form on Scripture. But say this for them, at least. They recognize that we're engaged in spiritual war, and they've been trying to train more exorcists in recent years because they recognize there's a growing demand. There's a growing need for
them. Yes, because as we move toward the very last hours of history as we know it, the enemy knows it. They're well aware that they're in their final hours, so they've ramped up the attacks.
Yeah, just as the demons really came out in force just prior to Christ's first appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are doing so again in the second. It's interesting that we really don't see any real discussion of demon possession in the Old Testament and exorcism. And that's a little unusual because demons were known by the Mesopotamians, the Babylonians, the other cultures around. They were aware of evil spirits, the Egyptians, the Canaanites. They knew about these things, but they weren't really ever, they're not mentioned really in the Old Testament at all.
About the closest you get is when the Witch of Endor is calling up Samuel.
Right, right. And gives a shout because Samuel actually comes up according
to
the text.
She wasn't expecting him.
She wasn't expecting him. She was expecting her familiar.
Mm-hmm.
So, right, that it is kind of implied there, but we really don't see any reference to casting out of demons until the New Testament, until Jesus' appearance, rather. And I think it's because perhaps they were not granted permission in Israel, or maybe they didn't ramp up their attacks until they knew he was about to arrive.
That's a really good question that probably we should ding, 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 talk to Mike Heiser about someday.
Right,
and
ask
me. By the way, if you haven't heard us, Derek and myself talking about this on Sci Friday and Skywatch TV interview programs, Mike Heiser's writing a brand new book, probably coming out next year sometime, called Reversing Herman.
The plan right now is to offer that in the spring, and Skywatch TV will be building a promotional package around that book and the book that I'm working on.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm like, okay, well, I got to step up the game here. First of all, I got to finish it, but I got to make sure that it's really good.
And make sure it's not 10 million pages long.
Yeah.
Well,
that's it. I may find that as I get into this deeper, I may have to split things out and have a second book, which would be okay.
Yeah.
Just hold that one for later. But yeah, it's going to be a good book. And there are some interviews that we did with Mike about the topic topics he'll cover in Reversing Herman that will be Skywatch TV web exclusives, full 30-minute programs, but only on the Skywatch TV channel on Roku and on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And those will be coming out in November.
Yeah, you know, if you haven't been checking out those so-called web exclusives, it's essentially you can only stream it, you know, but they're archived, so watch them all you want to.
Exactly.
And, you know, we love that.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, you'll get a taste of what's coming in Reversing Herman in those interviews coming up in November from Mike Heiser at Skywatch TV. But, yeah, that's going to be really something. There does seem to be a ramping up in the spirit realm. Things have changed so quickly just in our culture in the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, it seems weird to remember, but when President Obama took office, he was opposed to same-sex marriage. And now he's...
Well, at least that's what he said.
At least that's what he said publicly. Yeah, I mean, he was playing the political side of the fence. Hillary Clinton, in interviews prior to running for president in... I don't think she came out in favor of same-sex marriage in 08 either. But I know that when she was running for Senate in New York, she was opposed to it. Or said she was. Said she was.
Yes, I was going to say said she was.
Said she was. Yeah, and now she's all in favor. She was opposed to it before she was for it.
Well,
anyway,
we're at a point.
Things have flipped.
They really have, in fact, so much so that our country now is essentially blackmailing other countries.
Yes.
Saying you go along with our program and allow same-sex marriage. And this is in countries that, I'm sorry, but it is considered... Not just unpopular, but it is considered
grounds for death.
Yeah. In many of these countries, yes.
So we're withholding aid.
No, you can't. You want money from us? Play ball.
Yeah, you want these funds to help fight the scourge of AIDS that has lowered the life expectancy in your nation to like 35.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, just allow gays to get married, and we'll send you all the money you want.
Well, don't be surprised by this, because as we've said, this is spiritual warfare, and you know, part and parcel of being a human being on the earth at this time is that we have free will. The nature of free will is that I get to choose.
Right.
To live my life however I want to. Now, the law can come in and tell you can or can't do this, but free will means free will. If I choose to make silly, stupid, dangerous choices, then that's still my free will choice. Now, does that mean that you can get away with murder, so to speak? Not as far as the Lord is concerned.
Hmm.
You will be responsible for your free will choices. Christian, non-Christian, you're still responsible. If you are a Christian, then there's the judgment seat of Christ where you are held accountable for how you have served him in your role as a Christian upon this earth. If you are not a believer, then I'm sorry, you've just failed the test. It's pass-fail.
Exactly. One question entrance exam, pass, fail. There's no grading on a curve. No, well, the scales balance a little heavier toward the good than toward the not good. No, that's not how God works.
Does that mean as believers that we say, I'm sorry, I wouldn't have made that free will choice. Therefore, you are totally evil and I'm going to come up here and I'm going to publicly shame you and I'm going to say that you have no right to do that? I know people will disagree with me on that, but I believe that if we are to share the gospel with people, we cannot do so through a wall.
Yeah, we isolate ourselves into Christian-only enclaves. It's a little difficult to have any influence on the culture.
Now, that doesn't mean that I say I agree with your choice.
Right.
It doesn't mean that I fail to tell you that your choice has consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But I will still love you as a person because Christ still died for that person.
Mm-hmm.
That very likely will mean that person doesn't really want me to love him or her, but it doesn't mean that I don't try.
Hmm.
But you can't, it's really hard to lead someone to Christ when you're clubbing them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. People tend not to respond well to that for some strange reason.
I don't know why.
Yeah. There was a story that, speaks to the supernatural influence, the demonic influence, really, on our children. There's a story that was at Charisma News here this past week about Beyonce during a performance recently of a song of her song "Haunted," where she had a bit of a problem. Her hair caught on a really dangly earring and ripped the earring out of her ear. And of course, when you do that, you bleed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of blood, apparently.
Yes.
The response from her dedicated fans, who call themselves the Beehive, you know, Beyonce Beehive, started, well, the tags "cut for Beyonce" and "bleed for Beyonce" hashtags started trending on social media, Facebook and Twitter. And these kids are posting things like, if the queen bleeds, the hive must unify and leak our blood to restore her spirits. Beehive, we must.
To restore her spirits?
That's what this fan tweeted. If Queen Bee had to endure pain, so do I. Tonight we hashtag cut for Beyonce. Cutting is a demonic activity. There's no other way to describe it.
It is.
Shedding of human blood is prohibited in the Bible. God told Noah, don't do it for anyone that does it, even for any animal that sheds human blood. There will be a reckoning required.
There's something unique about human blood.
Right.
It is echoed. It is an echo, I should say, of the type of ritualism that takes place in countries like Thailand, where we've just recently seen that annual festival where the
nine emperor gods?
Yes.
But they call it the vegetarian festival, which is a weird deal.
Yeah, it's very strange. Well, they take axes and axe handles and swords and they thrust things through their cheeks.
Oh, my.
And they have children doing these things.
It is hideous.
And the same thing takes place in the Middle East during Islam.
It's called Ashura.
Yes.
It's the annual of the day commemorating the death of Imam Ali, who was the nephew and grandson of Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
Shia Muslims consider him the true heir of Islam, whereas Sunni Muslims follow the caliphate. Shia Muslims follow the bloodline of Muhammad.
Is this the ones who follow the Twelver, the Shia? That are you talking about Twelvers that
all
that
Shia think basically?
Don't the Twelvers believe that he's in occultation?
No. Right now? That was a different
Child.
Twelvers, right? Because Ali was a grown man.
Oh, okay.
But upon the death of Muhammad, the caliph. See if I remember this. Ali died at the Battle of Karbala in Iraq in the year 680. And it was at the order of the caliph that Ali and his followers were basically massacred by the caliph who took over. Yazid, I believe, was his name.
That does sound familiar.
Hussein. No, I said Ali. It's Hussein. I'm sorry. It's Hussein was the Hussein ibn Ali, the son of Ali. Mm-hmm. That's where I got confused. Bloodline of Muhammad was through Hussein, and then he was recognized as the leader by those who were following the bloodline of Muhammad. But the Sunnis followed the caliphate, and that was Yazid who declared himself the caliph. And so every year on this, the commemoration of this event, which took place on October 10th of 680 AD, Shia Muslims all around the world, regardless whether 7 or 12 or 5 or, will cut themselves and make themselves bleed. Even small children, dads will take knives and cut open their little sons, grandsons' foreheads or whatever. It's really gruesome when you see the amount of blood that is shed and some of the knives that these guys use. I mean, basically they're flailing away at themselves with, like half a dozen chains with knives on the end and basically cutting themselves open in the back. But very similar to that, that vegetarian festival in Thailand. And that's a weird deal too, because it's part of an event called, the festival of the nine emperor gods. And if I remember correctly, and I had to look this up a few weeks ago, the nine emperor gods are represented by the stars of the Big Dipper. Now, there are only, like, if I remember right, seven in the Big Dipper, and there are like two that are supposedly invisible to most humans.
Yes, but it's nine.
But right, it's nine.
The nine.
It's the nine, right. Yeah, like the
Aeneid.
Yeah. Some years ago, a troupe of actors, or an opera troupe, rather, in the 19th century was in this town in Thailand, and they took ill. And one of them had somehow told, or it had revealed to them, that if they were to switch to a vegetarian diet and sacrifice to the nine emperor gods, they would be healed. And suddenly they were healed. And so it's become a festival every year in this community in Thailand. And but I don't understand where the self-mutilation aspect of this comes into play.
It's
but bizarre. Yeah, I mean, it's bizarre. I mean, people taking things that you would never imagine. Like, that, what is that, a mortar shell? I mean, what's that? Is that a bowling pin? I mean, I can't. Mm-hmm. People are sticking things through their cheeks that are so big they've got to have people walking on either side to hold the thing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, swords and you know, fish hooks with it, – it's just it is –
But that is not unique to Thailand. This is something that takes place in almost every civilization across the earth throughout time. And that being said, I want to ask you a question because you've been writing these books, this book about the Great Inception, mm-hmm. by the way, and the war that's taking place in Syria. That has long roots, long spiritual roots that go way back. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I would say that it's not a coincidence that the areas where the fighting is taking place now seem to be areas that were considered the homelands of the Amorite peoples 4,000 years ago.
And Amorites should be familiar to any student of the Bible who's read the Old Testament.
Right, because the Amorites were the people, among the people groups that had to be kicked out of the Holy Land, out of Canaan, when Joshua and the Hebrews finally crossed over the River Jordan. They encountered two of the Amorite kings on the east side of the Transjordan region, Sihon, king of Heshbon, and Og, the king of Bashan. Now, of course, Bashan is the area that included Mount Hermon. So you've got that aspect there, Mount Hermon, which was the mountain where the Watchers came down and defiled human women. It was also considered the holy mountain of El, where El lived with the 70 sons of El. Not a coincidence that when God gave the nations their heritage, he divided the nations according to the number of sons of God, and there are 70 in Genesis mm-hmm. chapter 10. It's just that the Canaanites got the information from the fallen, so they got the
twisted version.
The twisted version, right, mm-hmm. the spun version.
The Inception version.
Exactly. The Amorite name comes up when God is made his covenant with Abram after calling him out of Ur of the Chaldees. And that's Chaldees, not Chaldeans, the Neo-Babylonians. It's 1,500 years later after Abram was called. So Abram was called from an area northern Syria, southern Turkey. Yeah,
closer to Haran.
Closer to Haran, right. Which is his brother's name.
Yes.
And that's not a coincidence. God told Abram that he would bring him to this land, but that for a time, his descendants would go into Egypt and would spend four generations there, for the iniquity, the sin of the Amorites is not yet complete. And, what did that mean? What does that mean?
Well, here's the thing. I have to tell you, I know, speaking for myself, how many times I have read through the Old Testament and come across that phrase and just sort of moved on.
Yeah.
But when you see a phrase like that, you should stop and say, well, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. What's that sin?
Well, historically, so I just started reading about the Amorites, who were the Amorites? And there's been a lot of study by researchers and archaeologists into the Amorites, and especially over the last 20 or 30 years, there's been a lot added to the corpus of knowledge on the Amorites. It was believed for a long time that they came from one specific area in what is now the middle of Syria, an area in the center part of the country from about where Palmyra is located, which back in the day had a different name called Tadmor, to a mountain which was called the Mountain of the Amorites. And there's also a Mountain of the Amorites listed in the Bible. And by the way, there were some scholars who believe that Mount Moriah. Moriah is an adaptation of Amor. Yeah. So that could also be the Mountain of the Amorites. But there's a Mountain of the Amorites in Syria on the west bank of the Euphrates called Jebel Bishri. This is roughly between Deir ez-Zor, which is an area where the Syrian army is trying to hang on to a strategic military and air base against the Islamic State. It's where the United States Air Force accidentally, in air quotes, bombed the Syrian army a few weeks ago to blow up any chance of a peace deal with the Russians. Up the Euphrates River to Raqqa, which is the Islamic State's capital. That region in there, where that sort of triangle from Deir ez-Zor up to Raqqa and then down to Palmyra, centered on this mountain, was considered to be the Amorites' homeland. And, of course, that is where a lot of the fighting is taking place right now as from the north, the Turks and Syrian rebels are driving down, advancing on Raqqa. The eventual goal be to take Raqqa, so they say. But there was another region that just over the last 30 years or so, scholars have figured out was another place where the Amorites came from. And this was northeast of Baghdad along the Diyala River. There was an enclave of Amorites there. And in fact, about the year 2100 BC, the last Sumerian kingdom, the third dynasty of Ur, was the dominant power, political power in Sumer. And a king by the name of Shulgi decided to build a wall because these Amorites kept coming down from this region and raiding their territory. And he actually built a wall, which was completed by his son called Shusin, 175-mile wall between the Tigris River and the Euphrates River. And they gave it an interesting name, and this name relates to, I think, an aspect of the Amorite character, which is going to go into the book. The early kings of the first Babylonian Empire, which was founded by the Amorites, and this is the first why I started down this track, the sin of the Amorites, you know, mm-hmm. they founded Babylon. There is no ethnicity called Babylonian. The Babylonian kings, Hammurabi and all of the rest, they were Amorites. They came in and they took over from the Sumerians. They basically just replaced all the Sumerian dynasties with their own kings. And so the old Assyrian Empire from about 1900 BC, the Babylonians, there were other Amorite kingdoms throughout northern Syria. They all traced their ancestry back to this one guy or tribe, or maybe it was a tribe named for the guy, scholars still aren't sure, called either Ditanu or Tidanu. But in 1999, a scholar recommended by Mike Heiser, he was the one who wrote that paper on the Mesopotamian origin of the Watchers,
yes.
wrote another paper in which he argues that the etymology of the Greek word Titan is this ancient Amorite tribal name, Ditanu or Tidanu.
Yes. And it may also be the actual etymological root for the Tuatha De Danann.
That's very possible, too. I mean, it gets pretty speculative there, but...
It makes a little more sense than some of the other explanations.
But the thing that I find fascinating about this is that it's not some guy on the internet saying, these two words sound kind of alike, so they must be connected. This mm-hmm. is a scholar looking at this and etymologically yes. saying, no, we can trace this through tablets that contain lexiconographies, mm-hmm. lexicons of... translations from Sumerian into Akkadian, and from Akkadian into Semitic, which is Amorite. The Amorites mm-hmm. were a Semitic-speaking people.
Hmm.
And so they can say, you know, we can see this, this, and this, and then we can translate this into Greek, and we can see that this is a match. So this wall that this Sumerian kings built over two generations, over 175 miles to keep out the Amorites, they named the wall that which keeps Ditanu away, that which keeps the Titans away. Is that not incredible?
You know, the
kids... And the area where that's being fought right now is the area up towards Kirkuk and Mosul, where they are fighting to get rid of the Islamic State.
And let's talk about how this connects to the Rephaim.
And the thing that's amazing that is when you get into the area of Lebanon, where in the 1920s, a farmer, you know, stumbled onto some clay tablets and told some archaeologists about it. And this was sort of during the golden age of archaeology in the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
Because between World War I and World War II, there was a lot of digging that took place in Syria, Lebanon, Israel, Iraq. And we learned a lot about the region from what was dug out of the ground then. Now it's so dangerous, you can't even really go over there and do any work. But this is where they found the remains of the ancient city-state of Ugarit, which so far is the closest language to Hebrew that's been discovered. They were Semitic speakers, very similar to Hebrew. And the time period from which the tablets were found, about the time of the Exodus, about 1400 BC to about 1200 BC. About the time that the so-called Sea Peoples came in, a confederation that included the Philistines, and came in and wiped out a lot of civilizations across the ancient Near East. About 30 years ago, scholars found a tablet and translated a tablet that they discovered was a ritual for crowning a new king, a coronation ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that during this ritual, they called on the Rephaim. Now, in the Bible, the Rephaim are mentioned a number of times. Og, of course, Og of Bashan was called the last of the Rephaim. But the Rephaim are also mentioned in the book of Job and a few other places. And typically, when in context, it appears as though they're referring to the spirits of the dead. And that's how they were seen in Ugaritic literature and in this ritual. But not just the spirits of the dead, but the spirits of the dead kings, the ancestors, the revered royal ancestors of the ruling house of Ugarit. And so when this king, whose name was Nakhmada III, was being crowned, they performed this ritual, according to this tablet, where they summoned the Council of Rephaim to come and bless the new king. But more than that, they summoned the Council of Ditanu, the Council of the Titans. The dead spirits of the Titans were summoned to bless the new king, Nakhmada III.
Cronus and his bunch.
Cronus and his bunch, according to that's how the Greeks would have seen it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But what if, because the kings of Babylon, Hammurabi, there are king lists that have been found for the ancestors of the kings of Babylon. So the ancestors of Hammurabi the Great and the ancestors of the kings of the old Assyrian Empire, which was founded by an Amorite chieftain named Shamsi Adad. Adad being the name mm-hmm. of the storm god, Hadad, mm-hmm. that we know as Baal, that his kingdom founded about 1900 BC. Thereabouts. His ancestors also traced back to this ancestor named Ditanu. So you got the kings of Ugarit, the kings of Assyria, the kings of Babylon. And again, when you were saying Assyria and Babylon, don't think Nebuchadnezzar. Those are the Chaldeans. Those are not the Amorites. And Shalmaneser and Tiglath-Pileser and all of these other mm-hmm. Assyrians who were coming in during the time of Hezekiah. Different group of people. Mm-hmm. The old Assyrian Empire, 1,000 years before those guys, those were the Amorites we're talking about. They all traced their ancestry back to this guy named Ditanu. Which, when you start reading reading reference materials regarding the Bible, the name Ditanu is also Dedan, as in Sheba and Dedan, sons of, or grandsons of Canaan, the son of Ham, the son of Noah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did they draw their names from one of the entities, or perhaps many entities, who were wiped out in the flood, but the knowledge then preserved through, because there are legends in Mesopotamia, Gilgamesh was remembered mm-hmm. as one who preserved pre-flood knowledge and brought mm-hmm. it back to Babylon, the occult knowledge for, witchcraft and sorcery and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that the Amorites were, that basically that's what they did, that there were memories in these various, descendants of these Amorite peoples all traced back to this one guy or this tribe named for this guy, whose name, again, is the etymological root of the word Titan.
And they not only wanted to worship the Rephaim, they wanted to release them. Because that may have been what the building that we refer to as Babel, the Tower of Babel, may have been all about.
Very possibly.
Trying to release whatever is imprisoned under that area, because that the area that was originally there was over the Abzu.
That's right, the Abzu, the abyss. And in Mesopotamian legend, Babylonian legend, the god Marduk supposedly banished the Apkallu, which were the Mesopotamian watchers, banished them to the Abzu and mm-hmm. told them not to come back. So they were banished to the Abzu, but Nimrod, Enmerkar, the Sumerian king Enmerkar, king of Uruk, was trying to rebuild that temple after the flood.
Mm-hmm. If you are listening to this and this is brand new to you, you're not alone. It's brand new to a lot of people. Derek has been finding sources all over the place, many of them academic sources that aren't writing from a Christian worldview necessarily.
Right, right.
They wouldn't be published.
That's why this isn't in the church. Nobody knows about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So I think the Lord is really inspiring you and helping you to find this stuff and coordinate it all. And this is fascinating, I think. And clearly you're fascinated by it. But you listening, if you are fascinated by this, Derek has given several talks down at Morningside, and those are available to stream.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I just pulled the links out yesterday. So mm-hmm. if you like, well, I'll tell you what. I'll go ahead and I'll put the links to those talks in the show notes at PIDradio.com.
Yeah, also, you can always go to DerekPGilbert.com, and then he's got all sorts of opinions that are posted. You're very good about posting every day. I stink. I don't know. It may have been last year the last thing I wrote. I don't know. But you're very good about it, and you not only give that knowledge on your website, but you also share it on the updates at Skywatch TV. But cool that you are writing this book, and I've watched how excited you are, and how your eyes light up when you are discussing this. That's why I know the Lord is really inspiring you to do this. So well, thank you for putting in the time.
Well, it's fascinating stuff. I mean, for me, this is like,
candy.
This is brain candy. So it's pretty amazing when you look at it and realize that scholars are familiar with all this stuff, and it just hasn't made it into the churches because the scholars are looking at it, most of them, from a secular perspective. For them, it's just an academic curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
But stepping back and looking at it through a biblical lens and saying, you know, the principalities and powers are real. They do influence humans to do certain things, to take actions. And that the actions make a lot more sense when you acknowledge and recognize the influence of the supernatural realm.
Yes.
You know, why would God personally come down and intervene at the Tower of Babel? Well, not quite sure, but it had something to do with this temple that they were trying to rebuild, and it's probable that this temple was to this god of the abyss because that temple, even though according to the archaeologist who led the dig in like 1947, the biggest level of the temple, which was the largest foundation for any ziggurat, any of the step pyramids in Mesopotamia, it was left unfinished. They just abandoned the work.
Oh, really? Like someone came down and confused their languages.
Exactly, in Genesis chapter 10. And, of course, there is an existing heroic or epic poem in Sumerian that remembers that this king Enmerkar was there. And, oh, yeah, the god Enki just decided to mess mm-hmm. with all the languages of the people during the work.
Well, this connects back to what we were talking about before, the idea of these nine emperor kings and mm-hmm. these nine gods or whatever, the Aeneid. I don't know. I can't remember exactly how many titans there were, but more than nine, I think. But
yeah, and the definition of titan changed, too.
I know.
Yeah.
And in fact, the fact that we see an assembly of gods that are replaced. You have the primordial gods that were replaced by the Titans, and then the Titans were replaced by the Olympians.
Right.
And eventually the Olympians, you know, depending on where you live, it isn't the Olympians. It's the, the Teutonic gods. They have Thor and all that bunch. And, and the truth is every civilization has this lore, these legends, this mythology about an ancient pantheon of gods who mm-hmm. ruled the world at one time. And the world, the fallen world, wants to bring them back.
Yeah, yeah. And that was one of the things that really intrigued me early on in when we first became aware of Tom Horn and his work back in 2005, that he was hearing from guys in the military, people at high levels within the military in the United States, and Steve Quayle talked about this a number of times, mm-hmm. That they were concerned that the Sumerian gods were returning. And like, what?
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, of course, they really never went away.
No, they didn't. They went into occultation.
Yeah, yeah.
They were hiding.
Yeah. It's, well, like we opened the program with that clip from Usual Suspects, which mm-hmm. is taken from a short story written by Charles Baudelaire in the 19th century. The greatest trick the devil ever pulled is convincing the world he didn't exist. Well, that's what they've done. To us in the West, you know, it's like, well, the supernatural realm, that doesn't interfere in our lives. I go to church on Sunday mornings because it makes me feel good. But, you know, the rest of the week, you can't really live that way. But we've heard this from Reverend Robert Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
When he goes to Madagascar or, you know, other places in Africa to instruct Lutheran pastors there, they know the supernatural realm exists. It's a regular part. It's part of their everyday lives. Mm-hmm. They see it all around them every single day. They recognize the influence of the spirits.
Well, here's the thing. If after the flood, the civilization that constructed Nimrod and his bunch were constructing the tower, if they were doing so to bring back the old gods, to open a gateway so that they could get out again if they were in prison, then I would argue that the same thing is taking place now.
Mm-hmm.
Foolish fallen humans want to bring back the old gods, and oh, guess what? They're going to kill you.
Yeah.
They want you dead eternally.
Well, it makes you wonder, though, was the goal to bring back the gods, or was the goal to open the portal so that humans could get back to that realm?
That's a really good question.
Because my belief is that there was a memory of the time when humans have always understood mountains to be sacred, mm-hmm. and skeptics or secularists will say,
assembly.
Right, exactly. Skeptics and secularists will say, well, it's because people living back in ancient times saw the mountains as pristine and remote and unsullied by the mundane efforts of human hands. And so that was naturally, that's where the gods lived because they're gods. They get the best stuff, right? But I think it's because we remember that mm-hmm. there was a time when our ancestors walked with the gods.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the sense of small g gods, the
yes.
supernatural entities who make up gods, mm-hmm. Yahweh's divine council.
Who live in a dimension beyond our own.
Exactly. But we've been kicked out. And, you know, the cherubim and that giant flaming sword kind mm-hmm. of, you know, keep us from getting back there. And the cherubim are not chubby little babies. They're some bad dudes you don't want to mess with.
And this idea of building an artificial mountain, which
right.
is what Babel was
exactly
is,
right.
is repeated in Egypt and
yep.
South America, Central America. Oh, it's all over the world. It's even in Europe.
In ancient Near East. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Far East,
yes.
Cambodia, Angkor Wat, and
yes.
other places like that. Yes. Pyramids all over the place. Even in Mesoamerica and North America, Cahokia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You've got a,
mm-hmm.
essentially a giant mound there,
mm-hmm.
trying to recreate a way to get back to where we were. And I think that may be why God said we have to stop them, because if they do this, they'll accomplish anything they set their minds to.
Well, the fallen world now believes, and it's an inspiration by the supernatural realm, that if you can all be of one language, you can pull it off.
And now, thanks to computers, we are
yes,
pretty much all of one language.
We are all of one
yeah.
language. Well, you know what? This is... We could probably go on and on, but, you know, this is probably a good place to end. The
yeah.
fact that you have made these presentations, so go online and stream them. Go to the links that Derek provides in the show notes. But also, next spring, you're going to have to plan on buying a book.
Yeah. Well, next spring, I basically trapped myself into finishing this book now, which is kind of what I wanted to do, because I know if I just keep, you know, saying, well, someday I'll do this, but not tell anyone about it, you know, there's no pressure. Now I've got the pressure on me, and that seems to be how I respond best. So, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff there, and the Bible is full of examples of this. And you were very perceptive in pointing out the confrontation in Mount Carmel, which I had overlooked as I was identifying key cosmic mountains, holy mountains that were central to like turning points in the spiritual war.
And on Mount Carmel, they were cutting themselves. That was a common
exactly.
practice.
Bringing it back to the earlier yes. discussion
the
on cutting.
The enemy, you know, Lord Jesus Christ, he shed his own blood for us. The enemy wants to shed our blood to give them eternal life.
Right, right. So, yeah, it's fascinating, but it makes the Bible more real when you start looking at this and realize that these entities that we've been reading about in mythology class since junior high are real. It's just that the way they're presented in mythology is sanitized so that we think it's just not, oh, you know, these are cute, funny stories
mm-hmm.
or, oh, the Greeks believe this stuff. But, you know, it's been sanitized to the point that the god that the priests of Baal were cutting themselves for
mm-hmm.
on Mount Carmel, Melkart,
mm-hmm.
he was called Baal, but it was actually Melkart, the city god of Tyre, which was ruled by Jezebel's father.
A.K.A. Hercules.
Yeah, Melkart was Hercules, and now he's just a cute and funny Disney cartoon.
You know, you loved comic books when you were a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
There are lots of young people today, many of them male, but lots of young kids today may not necessarily be reading the comic books, but they're watching the films
mm-hmm.
that are all based around the Avengers and the whole Teutonic legends and,
mm-hmm.
and superheroes left and right. Imagine being a 10-year-old boy and reading on the news or seeing on television or seeing on social media, guess what? Thor's real.
Yeah.
And he just arrived.
Yeah. Oh, they would be totally into it. I would have been.
They really would, especially mm-hmm. if Thor said, you can do this too.
Yeah.
All you have to do is bow down and worship me.
Exactly. And I will give you powers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're reaching a point where that is plausible. And it's plausible in large part because American Christians aren't taking the supernatural realm seriously.
No, they are not. Don't be a part of the iniquity of the Amorites.
Amen to that. Well, what else? Next
what
week,
are you doing on VFTB? Got something going on tonight?
Oh, gosh,
week?
Yeah, I'd forgotten. We've already done like three other things here this weekend here in the studio. Yeah, I've got to get It's an interview with Trey Smith.
He was with us down at Morningside. We had the best time.
Yeah.
And one of his major fans was there, and she went ballistic. And Bonnie, if you're listening to this, we love you, and you made Trey's day.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, Trey's parents were there, and Trey's mm-hmm. mom is – well, they both have been supporters of Jim Baker for a mm-hmm. long time, his mother especially. And when Jim recognized Trey and said,
Don't I know you?
I watched your movie. We need to get you on the show. And Trey's mom was just sitting there with her mouth open like, oh. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was really. But, you know, VFTB, who's that? Trey is going to be on. And then what else you got going on?
Well, I think that's pretty much it. Trey, it's going to be video as well as audio. So VFTB.net. But also check out the YouTube channel, YouTube.com/Derek Gilbert, where the audio version of my novel, The God Conspiracy, I'm releasing it every week as a YouTube video. Which you can subscribe to for free. There's also a special website if you just want to go to the website for that, which is thegodconspiracy.tk. But if you subscribe
cool with a K, too cool,
right? Yeah. if you subscribe, you'll get an email notice every time a new episode is released, and I'm releasing those on Monday mornings. We're up to episode 7 now, but there's like 27 of them all together. So it's going to be over the next several months while this spins out. So that, and the next week on Skywatch TV, it's
Hi, Sam.
Gosh, who is on Skywatch TV next week?
I don't know. I don't keep that schedule, so you'll have to look that up, and you'll have to come in back in and put that in. By the way, I also speaking of your novel, I still am writing my brand new ones, and I've written about 2,000 pages.
That's a lot of pages.
Yeah, the first book's going to be about 500 pages, and it'll be coming out, I hope, in the next few months. Initially, probably released in an electronic format only, simply because it takes a lot of money to publish a book. And Derek and I have actually started our own. Sam's in the other room doing his little dance.
Yeah.
We've already started our own fiction imprint, and it's going to be putting out these books. So it means a little bit of upfront cost, but that's okay. We're trusting in the Lord for it, and it mm-hmm. gives us more creative control. We've been through that before, we like to have a little more creative control, but doing Kindle and e-format, EPUB or whatever it's called. So if you are interested, stay tuned, and I'll be posting to Facebook and other social mm-hmm. media sites and to my website, SharonKGilbert.com.
It's the Red Wing Saga coming soon.
It's all about spiritual warfare taking place in the era of Jack the Ripper.
Mm. Next week on Skywatch TV, it's Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis.
Oh, how could we forget that? That was an awesome conversation.
Yeah, and there will be a web-exclusive interview, so a full hour of content with Bob McGinnis on his new book, Future War, which is on how technology and the transhumanist movement are transforming warfighting, but also transforming humanity itself.
And this from a gentleman who works at the Pentagon.
Yeah, so good stuff. You don't want to miss those. That's an important book to get your hands on. So until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. Yeah.